we have with us right now the lovely Charlene. You might remember Charlene Marilyn D'Angelo. She was a Hollywood kid who later signed with Motown and had a huge hit. In 1982, it was actually in the top two of the chart. It was like number two in the country, and it was a worldwide hit. You might remember I've Never Been to Me. It went like this, because I don't have it handy here, but it went, hey, lady, you lady. Feel like joining in if you like. But that was, you remember that song, right? I've Never Been to Me. Great song. I've been to paradise, but I've never been to me. I love that song, and I've always been an admirer of it. And now I actually know Charlene, and she's a fantastic singer, great person, and an author. That's right. I have in my hand a really interesting book. It's called Orphan Train, and we'll get into that. But let me ask you first, Charlene. First of all, welcome to PNP Network.
Thank you. I love your voice. You gave it kind of a jazzy swag there. I like it.
Well, we can record a duet someday if you like. But,
oh, that'd be great.
So,
hey, why not?
So tell us a little bit about this. Now, you were actually a young girl. I think you were 23 when you got signed to Motown, right?
Yes, I was. Yes. That's many, many moons ago.
It's unbelievable. Wow.
I know.
So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, it must have been, now Motown was huge even back then, right?
They were. They were just coming off of the big Diana Ross thing, the Temptations, that whole thing of Motown being so huge, which it influenced so much of the music out there. I'll tell you what happened. My first marriage, I was married to a guitar player, and I was washing the dishes one day, and he said to me, "You have a really good voice." I said, "What? I don't sing. I sang along with the Beatles," and that was kind of who I got my influence from, was the Beatles and all that. And he said, "We're going to go into a studio. I have a song I want you to sing. A friend of mine wrote it." And I said, "Are you kidding? In the studio? Really?" Okay, so I went in the studio. I sang the song called Sweet Sad Clown, and I couldn't believe how good my voice sounded. So then we went to a party up in Laurel Canyon with a friend, and we were all, hanging around, and he played the song for her. Her name is Nancy LaVisca, a very good friend of mine now. She was dating Berry Gordy at the time.
Uh-huh.
So, and she was also working for Sammy Davis Jr. So she said, "Oh, Charlene, I love that song. Would you mind if I played that for Berry?" And I said, "Berry, you mean the one who owns Diana Ross?" And I'm like, she goes, "Yeah." And so she played it for him. She got back to me a few weeks later, not even that long, and said, "He wants to meet you, Charlene." I'm like, "What? Wait a minute, me?" And I'm like, he heard that voice and he really liked it. So we went to the commissary at Warner Brothers where Diana was doing Lady Sings Blues. Okay. Now, you have to remember my favorite artist was the Beatles and Diana Ross singing, mm-hmm, "Whenever the love light starts shining through his eyes." So anyway, she tells me, "You're going to be meeting Diana Ross." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? No, this cannot be true." Anyway, so me and Nancy, we go to the commissary with Diana and Barry and a lot of the executives that are all in charge of making this movie, which was unbelievable. And so we're sitting there with Barry, we're talking, and I'm shy, but I'm not really shy. I love to sing. Even back then, I will stand up and sing because I felt so elevated from people liking my voice and me comparing myself to like different people I loved and everything. So Barry turned to me and said, "Okay, this is how Berry Gordy is. He's a kind of a guy that if you say you want to do something, he's going to call you on it immediately."
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me in front of Diana, in front of the executives, "Okay, Charlene, get up and sing." Right in the commissary, people are eating. There's a whole bunch of people there. I stood up and I belted out my song. I with no fear. I was just like, this thing came over me, Mark. It was like a this thing came over me of like such confidence and such a surety that I could do this that I didn't even sing before. So my first thing, right? So I stood up and I sang, and they gave me the little applause. And 2 months later, I was up at the 9,000 building on Sunset Boulevard, on Sunset and Hollywood, signing a Motown contract.
Wow.
It was insane. It was like, this cannot be happening. This is
that's
like
really
crazy.
Surrealistic, huh? Wow.
I know it is. It's totally surreal. It's totally surreal.
So here you are. You signed to this. Now, let's skip ahead a little bit. Because, again, you're 23 years old in 1973.
Yes.
So
right.
You signed the contract in 1977. I think it was around 77. They actually, for the first time, released I've Never Been to Me.
Right.
And
listen,
Yeah, it didn't do anything. But it hit like 97 on the charts.
Yes, 97.
Yeah.
I had been doing demos, all these demos for Hal Davis and Bob Gaudio with the Four Seasons and all these different people, producers coming through the doors at Motown. They were trying to find the sound for Charlene. I did a few demos for Michael Jackson. I sounded just like him because I could go really high.
Yep.
And then this man I met named Ron Miller approached me, and he said, I've been listening to your voice. He goes, they are giving you all the wrong songs to sing. Right? Now, Sweet Sad Clown was a ballad, right? But they were putting me in with all these more up-tempo, more R&B things, and it was like, wow, it wasn't really working for me. And Ron said, I've written you a song. I heard your voice, and I fell in love with your voice, okay? Hmm. And he brought, now, at that time, Mark, I was in a very bad marriage. I was, to put it blatantly, I was a battered wife, okay?
Ugh.
A battered wife, okay? So anyway, I'm in this situation, and Ron pulls me in to his little office that's about the size of a closet, and he pushes a little button on his tape recorder, and it comes on. Hey, lady, you lady, cursing at your life. You're a discontented mother and a regimented wife. I have no doubt you dream about the things you'll never do. And I literally, Mark, I broke down sobbing. Mm. I broke. Because everything that I was going through with this man that I was married to, everything I was going through with cutting all these songs that I'd done, and I wasn't getting the sound, now I was really jazzed about being a singer. I was like, I am totally 100% involved in this. I want to do this. I was hooked. So nothing happened. All this sadness is building up in me, and I'm crying, and Ron pushes a button off, and he sits back in his chair like, oh, my God, what did I do to this poor woman? And I am sobbing. I'll never forget. I couldn't breathe because I was so broken by the song. He said, honey, he said, I'm going to meet with Barry, and we're going to go in the studio with the song. And I said, oh, my God. Okay. Anyway, long story short, we go in the studio. It's absolutely amazing. We got a 30-piece orchestra. We got violins. We got harp. We got timpanis. We got drums. We got guitars. We have all the famous musicians nowadays, like Lee Ritenour. Joe Sample, which was in all these huge musicians today, okay, were playing on my song. And I'm like just numb, okay? I was so excited. The vocal took me a long time to get because I had never sung with this kind of stuff behind me. It was so captivating. I was thrown off by the beauty of this music. So they released the song, and it bombed. It bombed. Can you imagine having a song like that with Berry Gordy behind you? You have Don Costa, who did all of Frank Sinatra's violins. You have all these unbelievable people, these musicians, and it bombs. Mm. And you're like, what in the world is going on here? So I went through a really bad time, still married to this man who beating the crap out of me, blaming me, all this kind of stuff. So I left the marriage. I got out of it. I just left everything. in 1980, I met a cute little English man named Jeff Oliver. I met in church. He said, marry me, come back to England. We're going to have a new life. And I said, I'm following you because I'm done with this crap. If that song wasn't going to be huge, then I'm in the wrong industry. I'm in the wrong industry. Anyway, so I go back to England. We get married. I get a call from my mom about 2 months after. It's been about three years, okay? So now remember, I recorded the song in 1976, it was.
Yep.
And this is 1981, the late 81, okay, like early 1982. My mom calls me going, Charlene, Motown's looking for you. And I'm like, what are they looking for? So I get all this melancholy sadness. I get all this feeling of like, oh, my God, what if something's happening? What if, you know, and I'm getting all excited, and then I get really depressed and going, nothing's happening. Come on, nothing's happening, Char. Just stop it. Nothing's happening. So I put I've Never Been to Me on vinyl in England on my record player, and I start crying my eyes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that next morning, Mark, that next morning the phone rings at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's a man on the other line. I run downstairs. I get the phone. He goes, hi, is Charlene there? I go, yeah, this is Charlene. He goes, hi, honey, this is Jay Lasker from Motown Records. And I'm like, yeah? He goes, honey, you're on the charts you're on Cashbox. Do you remember Cashbox, Mark?
I sure do, yeah.
Yeah. You're on Cashbox with a double bullet. You're on Billboard with a double bullet. Your song is going insane. I'm like, what? I said, this has got to be a bad joke. This is a bad joke. This is not nice. I'd just gone through a whole nervous breakdown because this song, you know, and he goes, honey, you've got to get back here. They fly a whole crew to England. They do the most beautiful video in this castle, okay, in Norfolk, England. And my head, Mark, my head was spinning. I was like, this is insanity. So I was all jacked up again. They fly me on Concorde Airlines.
Now, wait a second. You also wore your wedding dress in that video, didn't you?
I did, yes. Yeah. I did. Oh, my God. It was so crazy.
Yeah.
So they fly me on Concorde Airlines to New York City to meet with Good Morning America, the host of the show. Oh, God, what was his name? I don't remember. He was wonderful. And I was being interviewed by Maurice Gibb of the Bee Gees.
What, was it Hartman, yes. The guy with that time? Hartman?
Yes, David Hartman. Yeah. Yes. Oh, I loved him. What a doll.
Yeah.
So I'm there doing the interview, and they're talking to me, and it's just like, it's surreal. They fly me back to England on Concorde. Then me and my husband moved from England back to America and settled ourselves in, and yada, yada, yada. Time goes on. The record's huge. I'm doing all these TV shows and interviews. And then Ron calls me and goes, honey, I've got your second single. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. It's called Used to Be with You and Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, my God, you've got to be kidding me. It's not getting bad. It's getting just better. It's getting incredible. So me and Stevie do the duet. It's being played every on KIQQ. Do you remember the station?
That one's not in my area, so no.
Okay. KIQQ was in L.A. Huge. It was like Kiss. It was like Rick D's Kiss Radio, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They're playing used to be every 20 minutes. Every 20 minutes. Mark, we got bombed. We got bombed. They were saying, how can you say this? How can you be saying this kind of stuff to kids and sex is legal? You're 12 years old and sex is legal. There's, you know, oh, my God. They called it the magnificent failure.
Hey.
And that was the end of Charlene.
But the song actually did reach number 46 on the charts in 82.
It did. But, you know, hey, coming off of another number two record, I sold millions of records with Never Been to Me.
Yeah.
I was on the top, and to come out with that, but you know what it was, Mark? It was the whole thing behind Used to Be. It was very preachy.
Mm.
It was too preachy for the time. People didn't want to hear it, and it literally destroyed my career.
Well, it's interesting to note, too, that even with I've Never Been to Me, there's two versions of that song. One of them has your monologue in it, which was about abortion and stuff like that. And that one wasn't played as much, the one with the intro. In fact, I noticed on YouTube that's still there, but there's more of them without that piece in it.
Without the talking part.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know what I always thought? I'm probably wrong, but I thought if they would have released the one with the talking part in what year?
82.
1997.
Yep.
82.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yep.
No. Earlier, I'm saying.
Oh, the early one, yeah. Okay, yeah.
The early one.
Yeah.
I'm thinking if they would have released the one with the talking part the first time in 1976, it could have been a hit.
Yeah, maybe. No, it's possible. I mean, they might have screwed up by doing that, but it's interesting because I love the one with the spoken version. I don't like the other one. I'd rather hear the whole thing.
Oh, I don't either.
Yeah.
It needs that in it. It's like that's what sums the whole thing up. That sums the whole song up in a nutshell. Basically, bam, you know what truth is? It's that baby you're holding. Oh, my God.
Mm.
And you know what, Mark? People ask me, oh, you know what? Well, what is the song about? The song is a metaphor. It's a woman in her kitchen ironing her clothes, wishing that she had done all this stuff. She didn't do any of it.
Yeah.
It's all in her imagination. It's all in her mind. And that, Mark, that's why the song hit me so hard when I heard it the first time, because I was in a very abusive, horrible marriage that I couldn't get out of. And I was dreaming of getting out of it, but feeling I'm never going to get out. This man's going to kill me before I ever get out. And then hearing that song and then Ron telling me it's all a metaphor, it was like a gun going through my head of like, oh, my God, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I remember one of the lines from it was something like about the subtle whoring that comes to it was a very powerful line.
Subtle whoring that costs too much to be free.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very very important big line. I love that.
Oh,
line.
I know. And it's like, you know, women are feeling, you know, I got so much hate mail from women. I got hate mail. How dare you say that we need to have a man, we need a baby, and we need, you know, it's like, oh my God, get over yourself. You know, it's a metaphor, number one, and it's this woman in her incredible loneliness and feeling of desperation dreaming that one day she can have a life like that.
Yep.
That's truth. That's love. You know, that's real love. What is real love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, oh, God. I mean, the song was so powerful. And, oh, you know what I played today? This is why, because I was so ready to do your show. I was so excited to do it. I have my alarm on and everything, and it's all at the damn wrong time. But you know what I was playing this morning? The Temptations version of I've Never Been to Me.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever heard it?
I have, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they do the male lyric.
Yes, it's a little different. Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, I need a cup of coffee and a moment of your time. I can tell you're raising hell the way I used to do, but I wish someone had to talk to me. Oh, my God, that lyric.
Like I want to talk to you.
Yeah. I've been to China and Asia Minor on any ship I could sail. Mm. Made some noise with the good old boys as we wrecked a southern jail. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard the best men crawl and some teardrops fall. There ain't nothing I didn't see. I've been to paradise, but I've never been to me. And, oh, my God, so powerful.
Yeah.
You know who Ron wrote the song after?
I don't.
He wrote it after the captain in Jaws, Robert Shaw.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
That was his character. He wrote it after. And then the woman version he did for me when he heard my voice and hearing me singing all these songs that were totally wrong for me. You know, they were totally wrong. I was like, I was like, what am I doing? I'm not Michael Jackson, you know? And then Ron heard the possibility in my voice and he fell in love with my voice and said, you are an amazing singer. And then we cut albums and all that stuff after that.
How'd you feel in 1994 when the movie The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert came out?
Ron called me. He said, "You're never going to guess what your song is in." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "You got to go see it. It's a campy gay movie." And I'm like, "Oh, my God. I love it. It was so funny."
There's nothing like two drag queens singing at in a hotel. That's pretty cool.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was so funny.
But, I mean, it's an incredible story. You could have written a book about the song, the one song. It was just
You know what?
Amazing.
Mark, they were thinking about doing a film, a story of my life. Because they knew what I had gone through with my marriage, and it would have tied in perfectly. It would have tied in absolutely perfect with my life and with the song. But that never happened. You know, Motown was kind of a different kind of company. You know, they kind of threw records against the wall to see if they stick. And that was kind of the theory, you know. Like Ron used to say, hit records aren't released on Motown, they escape.
So are you still married to the second husband?
Yes, I am, Jeff. Yes, yeah, I am. I've got two beautiful children with him.
Great. Now, are any of your children singers?
Oh, well, me and my daughter Bethany are starting a band.
Really?
And this band, oh my God, this band is called Grenade. We're doing our debut opening sometime in February. We're trying to get a date together. We have three other guy singers that are amazing. They're phenomenal. And it's going to be a top 40 band, mixing some of the originals. And we're trying to figure out a way of doing I've Never Been to Me, because people like to dance and they like to, you know, this band is going to be incredible.
Well, you have a dance version of that song already, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I didn't get a lot of favor from it.
Well, that's okay. You know, if you liked it and you had fun time with it, that's all that really counts.
I had fun.
You know?
I had fun.
The other thing I want to mention, because we mentioned the movie that used it, but I happened to be a big Jimmy Fallon fan, and a couple of years ago, he sang it on his show, and they had a little thing that they had a little fun with it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, my editor and manager is trying to get me on there. We're trying to get on the show because that would be so perfect. It would be perfect. Come on, Jimmy. Get me on the darn show. You already know who I am.
That would
be
cool.
I just have to get on there.
I think that you should be on there. That maybe, you know, I know that the people around his show, Jimmy Kimmel's a producer is actually one of my friends on Facebook. But you never know. You never know who's going to listen to it, because once this is up and we promote it, it'll reach a lot of people in Hollywood. So who knows?
Put a little word out there for me, Mark.
You never know, right? So
never
talking
know.
About
you
talking
never
about a
know.
Word, I'm not knowing what to expect, folks, when I get a book called Orphan Train by Charlene Oliver, right? All right, I know Charlene from Facebook, and I know her from her song "I've Never Been to Me," right? So I'm figuring this is going to be a lighthearted little exercise and some fun for me to read. Well, it is it's not fun. But it was a really, really good book, and it's about the Holocaust and a relationship that occurs in it. And I got to ask you, first of all, why did you write Orphan Train?
Oh, honey, you know what? I'm asking my brain that every day.
No, I mean, you must have done a lot of research, I would assume, for this book.
Yes, I did. After I made the decision to make it about the Holocaust, I did a lot of research. I was inspired, you know, me and my daughter went to see the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. We went there. We were very, very moved by that. It was just incredible. And then I watched a movie called Freedom Riders. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yes.
Hilary Swank.
Yes. Yep.
A woman by the name of Neet Gies came on there to meet the children. And because she was in the classroom, she was saying to them, you know, you make fun of each other. And you're in a gang, you think that gang is cool? I'll tell you about a gang that changed the world, that was destructive and killed millions and millions of people. And they were like going, oh, yeah, that's cool. And she goes, no, it's not cool. And so she got them all into learning about the Holocaust and Anne Frank and everything. And then she had them write letters to this survivor, Neet Gies, a real woman. But, of course, it was an actress in the movie. But the real woman was Neet Gies. So... she came on, and this woman was talking about her relationship, and it's a true story, what she went through. She housed the Frank family, and they had a gun to her head, and they said, we should kill you right now. And they didn't. They spared her life. So hearing that woman and listening to that, and it just, my heart got pulled into the horrors of the Holocaust. And this particular camp that I wrote about is Ravensbrück, and it's the only camp where women can have babies. But it was very women. It was a lot of women. And this one commandant was the only, like, the male figure that came in, because he was desperately in love with Christina Nava. He's in love with her. So anyway, but in that day, in that time, they used the babies horribly enough for experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did a lot of experiments, and the women too, and all, oh my God, it was so horrific, which I didn't want to add that on my book. It was depressing enough. Mm-hmm. I don't want to add any more about experimentation and what they did. I don't need to go into that.
Well, I will just say, because I don't want to really get into the Holocaust stuff, because people know it already. But the book is fascinating. It's a love story in a way, kind of thing, and it's really a great book, and it's an easy read. And I recommend people to get Orphan Train. But you know, one of the first things you wrote here is a quote, and it actually begins the book, I think. It says, "Monsters exist, but they are too few in number to be truly dangerous. More dangerous are the common men, the functionaries ready to believe and to act without asking questions," from Primo Levi. Well, you know, how do you juxtapose that kind of quote and this kind of book with what's going on with ISIS and the Islamic State and that's going on in this world right now?
Too similar, Mark. It's too similar. It's frightening. It's very scary to me. It's scary. I hope to God that history does not it's already repeated itself.
Yes, it is. It is.
Talking about. Yep. They've done all that stuff. They're still doing it.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. It's very frightening, and all we can do is just live our one day at a time. You know, I mean, you know, kids nowadays, because you know what? The news nowadays is so blatant. It's out there. It's in our face. We hear it. You know, and kids are hearing that. They must be so scared.
Well, that and the fact that the news is not real sometimes either. And it's hard to know what to believe and what not to believe. My mother tells me things she watches on TV. And I say, Mom, you know, that's not true. Oh, yes, it is. I saw it on Channel 5. Well, that doesn't mean it's true any more than if it's on the Internet that it's true. So
everything has been blown out of the wall. Everything's blown up. I mean, what do we do next? Where are we going to go next? What are we going to... You know, what's going to happen next? We just don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable.
Time.
We have about a minute left, and I want to make sure folks know where can they get the book Orphan Train?
They can get the book Orphan Train on Amazon. They can get it on Barnes & Noble website. They can get it on, my website, Charlene.Oliver.
You don't have CharleneOliver.com is not yours?
CharleneOliver.com.
Okay,
yes.
There you go. So you can get it there. I assume they can get the. Do you sell a version of your music as well?
My website, my personal website, is CharleneSongs.com, which has my little children's book. And Mark, did you know that I have an autobiography called "I've Never Been to Me"?
I do not know that. I would have recommended you write one, but I guess you already did. So
I did. I wrote one.
It would have been nice. You should have sent it to me so I could have actually talked about it. That would have been good.
I've got it. You know what? I've got to get you one.
I
don't think they're in print anymore. I've got one. I've got one book.
Well, I don't want to steal yours. I'm not going to take yours.
I know you can get it off my website, CharleneSongs.com, along with my little children's book called The Adventures of Herman the Worm, which is a cute little child's book. I had to get something in there softer. You know, my life story is like a nightmare, and the Holocaust is like a nightmare. I've got all these nightmares. I had to get a fun little children's book in there, you know.
But, you know, the nightmare is ended, and now life's pretty good for Charlene. So, and you're even on the Mark Snyder program on PMP Network. So how can life get any better than that?
Oh, you're so sweet.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm sure we'll speak again at some point.
But, oh, I'd love it, Mark. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, and have a wonderful 2017.
Yes, same to you, my friend. Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.